Tim McNally. Welcome to the Dine, Wine, and Spirit Show, NOLA Drinks Edition. Here's your host, Brian Diaz.
All right, everybody. Brian Diaz here with you. Welcome to the unofficial start of the weekend here in the Crescent City, friends. Yes, friends, here at NOLA Drinks, one of our take-home messages this week from the Maison Blanche was, oui, oui, mon ami, et le jour suivant, devant le congrès, no, no, mon ami. I think that was the real dandruff brush off, wasn't it? Hey, friends, we got a good show coming up for you here today. Well, let's see, who are we talking to? Who are we talking to? We have two really cool interviews. We are going to be chatting with Captain Sam Sikkema of the Picton Castle, one of the tall ships that came into New Orleans over the weekend to help us celebrate our tricentennial and also loosely connected to Navy Week. If you caught the show last week, and I hope you did. We interviewed Aaron Short of Tall Ships America. That is the organization that's that sort of loose collective of the fully rigged sailing ships, the fleet, if you will, of them that came in over the weekend. And what a great event. Had a great time chatting with her last week. You can go back and catch the podcast. We interview her. We interview Jamal Batiste, who is a great drummer, part of the Batiste family here in town. And, of course, our good friend Heather Twitchell, who is the food and beverage manager from French Quarter Festival. So we had some stuff sort of wrapping up French Quarter Festival. But, as I said, we chatted with Aaron from Tall Ships America teeing up the event. And then just the other day, most of the ships had already left, but the Picton Castle was still there. It's a really neat training vessel, and they were getting ready to embark, or are getting ready to embark, I should say, on their next round-the-world journey. And they invited me to come on board and chat with Captain Sam Sikkema. And Sam is actually the outgoing captain. He is turning it back over to Captain Moreland, who actually owns the ship. And Sam is going to be doing something else up in Maine, I believe. So we chat with him, and it's a really cool interview. We discuss the ship, the program that they do. We talk a little bit about eating and drinking on the ship, how that works, and we talk a little bit about eating and drinking when they pull into port. And as you can imagine, since they do around-the-world journeys and other long-haul journeys, they get to see some pretty exotic places. So a fun conversation that way. And then we also have a celebrity walk-on by Dawson Moreland, the young son of Captain Moreland that I just mentioned, who popped in during our interview, so we stick Dawson on the air briefly. Then after that, we are going to chat with Chris Shaggy Davis, as he is known, the NOLA Crawfish King, and he is the guy responsible for putting on the Crawfish Festival, NOLA Crawfish Festival, that's happening this Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, sort of those interceding days between Jazz Fest, which is, of course, upon us. With Chris, we talk about we talk about the festival, of course, and how you can go check it out. It's going to be in the evenings, Central City Barbecue again this Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Great bands, crawfish, beer, barbecue, that whole thing going on. But we talk about, especially for our listeners who are maybe new to New Orleans, or you're listening out of the area and you're maybe, you know, loosely familiar with the crawfish boil and what we do here during this time of year, and we're still relatively in the heart of crawfish season. Chris gives us a little bit of a run of how crawfish season works, and also how a boil works. So hope you find that interesting. If you're from here, you probably know a lot of that. But some of the stuff about how we talk about, you know, how crawfish are farmed and how rice fields, rice paddies play into this. It's an interesting conversation. And then, of course, we talk about the festival. So that should be, it's a fun interview also. And a shout out to our friends at Sylvain Restaurant there at 625 Charters for hosting us for that interview. Always appreciate that. Yes, friends, as I mentioned, Jazz Fest is upon us. The big behemoth music festival that it is kicks off tomorrow, of course, if you're listening on the radio, Friday, April 27th, and runs a Saturday, Sunday. Then we quote-unquote take a break, at least from Jazz Fest, and it picks back up on Thursday and runs through Sunday, May 6th. And that Thursday, you know, it really kind of, we used to think of that Thursday as quote-unquote locals day, but we know that this is now really an international event. We get so many visitors that come to the city. I've already seen a lot of folks around that are here to visit. A lot of folks come for well over a week, catch the whole festival, and do all kinds of other stuff. And so there is a lot of other stuff going on. A lot of us know about Jazz Fest already, so I'm not going to go too far into that other than, hey, we know it's at the fairgrounds. I just gave you the dates. Lots of national acts, and then, of course, a lot of our beloved local acts are going to be playing as well. But this also creates an opportunity, friends, for all kinds of other things that go on around town. We're going to touch on a couple of those things in a second. One of the things that I always find that's very interesting and kind of funny is we get so, I don't know how people do it when they come to town. They must really grind it out, because if you're going to Jazz Fest all day and into the evening, and then you're going out to catch shows on Frenchman Street or wherever late at night, and then turn around and do it again. I mean, people are coming, you got to be sleeping like 3 or 4 hours at the most, and then you're going out and doing it again, which I respect that. I used to be able to do that in my younger years. I can no longer do that. But where I was going with this is that there's a lot of really cool stuff that happens. Late night shows. Okay. And I get really excited because every once in a while I'm listening to the Live Wire, which is the music calendar on WWOZ, the fantastic radio music station here in town. And they do a live music rundown at the top of every odd hour. And they'll say, oh, you know, so-and-so is playing at this club on Frenchman Street at 2. And I'm going, 2? I'm thinking this is right in my wheelhouse, 2 in the afternoon. They go, 2 a.m. Oh yeah, shows start at like 2 a.m. Some of these places have live music going on until 5 or 6 in the morning. It's pretty crazy. But anyway, hey, all kinds of great activity, lots of great visitors in town. Make sure we treat our visitors as we always do here in New Orleans. It's a joy to have them here. Lend them a hand, especially folks that don't speak English so well and stuff like that. If they need directions, they're looking for something, lend them a hand. We know we do that well here, but that's part of our culture also, is welcoming folks from everywhere. And we have a lot of folks in from town for Jazz Fest, as we always do. Wanted to mention, friends, a few things as I was talking about how a lot of things go on these interceding days and in addition to the days of Jazz Fest. And since, as I said, you can go find out who's playing. We already know all about that kind of stuff. But coming up here on April 30th, which is going to be Monday evening. Starts at 6 p.m. with the Free Outdoor Festival. This is at Tipitina's, of course, the great music club, and that's at 501 Napoleon Avenue, of course. Tipitina's has the Tipitina's Foundation, and they are doing their 17th annual, Instruments A-Comin' 2018. And the Tipitina's Foundation is a wonderful organization that supports the music scene here in New Orleans, supports existing musicians. One of the big programs also that they do is that they provide instruments to students of music. And as we know, and this is part of why even Jazz Fest works and why it is what it is and all that is, and we've talked about this, I encourage you to go back, digressing briefly here, but I encourage you to go back and catch a show a couple weeks ago where we chat with a jazz historian and tour guide, John McCusker, because we talk about the importance of the music and jazz in particular, about how that is a tourist draw to this city. We have so many people, especially from Europe and other parts of the country, Japan, for example, that come to see us because of our jazz heritage. And our music heritage, not just jazz, but jazz plays a central role to all of this. So making sure that we invest and continue to invest in the next generation of musicians is such a critical thing to the culture of the city, the tourist economy, which is the backbone of the economy of the city. This is a critical thing. And what the Tipitina's Foundation does, as I mentioned, is that they work to provide instruments and education to students who may be in need of, you know, some assistance in this regard. And they do their annual event, as I said, coming up on Monday, April 30th at 6 o'clock. There's a free outdoor festival where you can go. There's a battle of the bands, a silent auction, a kids area. They're going to have food trucks out there. And then at 8 p.m. is the benefit concert. Here's the lineup: Galactic, New Orleans Suspects, Flow Tribe, Johnny Sketch and the Dirty Notes, Naughty Professor, Honey Island Swamp Band, Bo Dallas Jr. and the Wild Magnolias, Nth Power and the Fortifiers. Man, that is that's a great lineup right there. And that's at 8 o'clock. So that's a normal human hour. It's going to go really late, I'm sure. General admission is $60 and VIP is $200. You can go check that out. Check out tipitinasfoundation.org for more on that front. Also, we have Shorty Fest coming up. That's going to be at 7 p.m. on Thursday, May 3rd. So next Thursday, a week from today, if you're listening on the radio, that's at House of Blues, 228 Decatur Street, New Orleans. Shorty Fest, of course, is put on by Trombone Shorty, and so it headlines with a Trombone Shorty in Orleans Avenue, Tank and the Bangas, the Soul Rebels, Watersea, great band, saw them recently, the Trombone Academy, Trombone Shorty Academy students, New Breed Brass Band, there we go, I'm struggling here, Big Chief Juan Pardo and the Golden Comanches, Darcy Malone and the Tangle, saw them at French Quarter Festival, man, she can sing, Chris Royal and Dark Matter have also seen them somewhat recently, they rock. So that's going to be really cool. Again, that's next Thursday, May 3rd at House of Blues, 228 Decatur Street, New Orleans. Go check out their website, it's at 7 p.m., but for more on tickets and all of that good stuff. Yep, let's see, one more event we're going to roll through here real quick. Not really so much to do with Jazz Fest, but taking place Saturday, May 5th. Another thing you can go do if you're not at Jazz Fest or you're looking for something else to do afterwards, 6 to 11 p.m., the annual Jammin' on Julia event. It's in the Arts District, New Orleans, of course, there on Julia Street. Music, art, food, and drink. It's from 6 to 11 p.m., spans the blocks of 300 to 500 Julia Street. Lots of good food. The galleries are open. You can cruise in, check that out. Lots of great drink, of course, and really good music. Jen Howard Band, our good friends, why I wanted to mention this one. Our good friends Bon Bon Vivant, who was on the show with us recently, are also playing. Helen Gillet, Mariachi Jalisco, and others will be out there. So that is Saturday, a week from this Saturday, May 5th, 6 to 11 p.m., 300 to 500 block on Julia Street. Friends, we're going to take a little break here on the show. We're going to be back with our interviews, and we'll close things out later. Come on back.
Hi, New Orleans. It's Laura from Sobu, and I'm here with Chef Juan Carlos.
Sobu's got happier hour. It's 3 to 6 from 3 to 6.
It's bar bars, sips, and snacks, all for $3 to $6 from 3 to 6 p.m. every day.
Laura's got something to please everyone at the bar for happier hour, all for 3 to 6 here at Sobu.
And we know you'll want to try a smoky pulled pork taco or any of the other delicious snacks on our happier hour menu.
Sobu's happier hour every day from 3 to 6, 310 Charter Street in the quarter.
Complimentary parking next door at the W Hotel.
Hi, I'm Dickie Brennan, and I'd like to invite you to our new Black Duck Bar located on the second floor of Palace Cafe. Named after the Prohibition's infamous rum runner, the Black Duck features over 120 rums as well as an extensive tequila collection. In addition, acclaimed master French chef Rene Baggio heads up the small plates and charcuterie kitchen. Join us for happy hour Monday through Friday from 4 to 7 p.m. with half-price small plates, local draft beer, and tap wine.
Frenchman right back again with that fine little number that'll never end. I've been everywhere and I've been all around, but here's what you do in the Creole town. Just let your bar town roulette and let the mule poulet. Now don't you be no poulet, you let the bar town roulette.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with you, WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land, wherever you may be. Thanks for tuning in today, friends. We are here aboard the Picton Castle, one of the tall ships, part of Tall Ships NOLA 2018 that came in to help us celebrate the tricentennial here in town. And I'm pleased to be a guest on the Picton Castle, and I am sitting with Captain Sam Sikkema. Sam, thanks for having me on board today.
Yeah, well, thanks for stopping by.
My pleasure. So we are here aboard the ship, which is really cool. Did you guys have a good time here in New Orleans since you got here on Thursday? Is that right?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, I mean, it's a fantastic city, and it's, you know, coming in from sea is a special way to enter any, you know, any especially old port where there's so much history of shipping and commerce here, and this is a city that sprang up out of the sea. You know, it's a special way to view the port coming in, and to, you know, and then to, you know, get into it right here in the heart of the French Quarter. It's been really cool. Yeah,
that's great. And you guys have been here for about 4 or 5 days.
Yep.
And the ship's actually going to be here for another week or so, right?
About that. Yeah, hopefully leaving around the 1st of May. Yeah.
Well, tell us a little bit about the ship. This is obvious. It's a very it's an older ship, right?
Yep.
And you guys are getting ready. Well, the crew that's going to be staying is getting ready to embark on a around the world journey coming up here.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, she is a very interesting ship. She was built in 1928. She launched August 4th, 1928, and she was originally built as a steam fishing trawler out of Grimby in England, and sailed the Bristol Channel and all the way up into the North Sea. And so she fished until World War II. During World War II, the Royal Navy confiscated the ship and turned it into a minesweeper, as they confiscated so many ships, you know, for the war effort, which is kind of crazy when you think about it. She's a steel ship, and, you know, mines are set off magnetically by
you make do with what you got.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. So this is even though they weren't necessarily getting shot at, there's a very brave crew that sailed this vessel all through World War II and the Western approaches, and she survived the war and afterwards went back to fishing. And then she was sold off to Scandinavia to be a freighter, coasting freighter, and, you know, hauling bauxite out to oil rigs and all kinds of dirty, nasty stuff. And she was turned into, you know, diesel-powered ship at that point.
Okay.
But she was well taken care of all throughout that point of her life. There was a group of people in the early 90s that were looking for, headed up by Captain Daniel Moreland, who were looking for a ship to turn into a sail training ship. And it had to be the right sort of hull. You can't just take any ship, and make it
okay
a sailing vessel. And they found this one, which was built on the lines of old sailing ships, you know, from the 1920s there.
So it wasn't fully rigged then initially?
No.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
No, but, you know, they hadn't developed at the time. They hadn't developed the mindset that if you're pushing it with a big, powerful engine, you can make a big box out of it that carries a lot of cargo. They still wanted something that moved through the water easily and sweetly like a sailing ship would have had to. So she was actually perfect for converting and rigging as a proper age of sail square rigger.
That's really interesting. Yeah. So when did they, you said early 90s?
Yeah, they got the ship in the early 90s, and throughout the 90s took the time to, you know, get raise the funds to get her refit and rigged, and they did that in Lunenburg, Nova Scotia. In 1997, she went around the world on her first world voyage, and she's done that 6 times since then, and many North Atlantic crossings, and, you know, back and forth all around the eastern seaboard of North America, and now she's about ready to set off on the 7th world voyage. So even just the last 20 years, the ship's gone almost 300,000 miles as a sailing ship.
Wow. Now, you guys do, people are going to wonder why going around the world. It's an educational-based thing here on the ship.
It is, yeah. She's based on the old concepts of a training ship, that these sailing ships, we're not actually here to teach sailing, but we're here to teach people, you know, how to be in an environment where they have to learn complicated things and where they have to be able to get along with other people, where, you know, you create work ethic and, you know, you create the community that allows people to, you know, find their own strengths and find their weaknesses and deal with that. And so you, in some ways, when, you know, people ask me, well, what do they get out of the ship? You know, I say, if you have somebody on board this ship for a year, when they leave, they should step off of this ship, look out into the world and say, I can do anything.
Right.
If I can do that, I can do anything. And that's an amazing amount of confidence to have in life nowadays, you know, where it's basically you're told you can't do anything. And, you know, in order to accomplish this, and these old seamanship traditions and techniques, it's a lot of stuff, but it teaches you a lot about situational awareness and, you know,
life skills,
being part of your surroundings, and that's huge. Those are huge lessons today.
Cooperation.
Well, you're living, you know, your tight quarters, 50 other people on board, and you know, you got to figure out how to make that work.
Right. Now, Sam, how does it work where, it's a training ship, it's an experiential learning ship.
Yep.
So it, the principal mission then is to train people for the trade.
That's correct.
Right? Okay. Yep. And then go on to move into the profession.
Right. And simply by operating the ship as a sailing ship and teaching people the trade of traditional seamanship and modern seamanship, you know, you get all of those extra benefits out of it. But if people go to sea in this ship, they will learn all the basics they need to move on to a maritime career afterwards.
That makes a lot of sense. And you and I were talking about before we started recording here and going on the air about people in recreational boating,
mm-hmm.
and how GPS has made it very easy for people to find themselves out on the water and then maybe mess things up. So
yeah.
Teaching people the traditional way to do it builds that foundational skill that you need to.
Right.
Right. You got to. Yeah.
And a lot of that is teaching people that, you know, it can go really wrong. And we're going to lead you to the edge of it going wrong, but we're not going to let you go over that edge.
Right, okay.
And that's, I think, one of the hardest parts about operating a ship like this is, you know, sort of, you know, very metaphorically, giving people enough rope to hang themselves, but not actually letting them do it.
Right, right. Well, you know, it's interesting that you say this, and one of the things that I was telling you before, I was a dive instructor for a long time.
Uh-huh.
And one of the things that you would always learn as a dive instructor was that rarely, if one thing went wrong on a dive, okay.
Yeah.
Two things, maybe a problem, but rarely would that be an accident or injury,
right,
or
right.
Fatal. Three things, four things, when you start to get into cascade system failure,
right.
Is when you really screw up, and that's when it's a dangerous situation.
And that's why we talk about that all the time, the error chain, you know, and you know,
right.
when the link in the chain breaks, that's when it all fails, and lots of little things. And, you know, but that's where, you know, a sailor coming off of one of these ships learns a more profound situational awareness to your outside world and surroundings than you would, you know, just going through ordinary day-to-day life. And that's what keeps the error chain. That's what keeps those problems from actually happening, is being aware of your surroundings, knowing what's going on, and understanding, you know, nature and the environment and how it affects you in this very different way.
Stop, think, and act, too,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
That's always a big one.
Right.
Look around, think about it for a second before you do something. Well, we got about 2.5 minutes, Sam, before we take our first break. Tell us a little bit about yourself. How did you get involved in the world of sailing? How did you find yourself on the Picton Castle?
Yeah.
We'll probably stop this in the middle and come back to that, but yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, as a kid, grew up in southwestern Michigan, right on the shore of Lake Michigan, and my father put me on a little boat when I was really small, and I didn't like it at first. You know, the boat boat flips over and then you're in the water, and that right. seems to defeat the whole purpose. But it was amazing that I got to learn that at such an early age. And then I was in the Sea Scouts when I was in high school.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Through, offshoot of the Boy Scouts, and learned, small boat sailing and seamanship, and straight out of Chapman's, like you were talking about. And they one summer, the tall ship festivals were coming through the Great Lakes near my hometown, just like we're doing here in New Orleans. And the Sea Scouts facilitated us to, go off to sea on one of these ships. And I looked at that and was just, was sort of awestruck at first. But then when I got out of high school, I sort of realized that you can actually make somewhat of a living doing this and, see the world and see amazing things and meet a lot of amazing people. And, I dived headlong into that. And 15 years later, here I am in command of a ship coming up the Mississippi River.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
So when you did the first trip with Sea Scouts, was that a longer time journey, or did you get for several days?
Yeah, we were on board the ship for 3 weeks.
Okay, yeah.
Which was good, because if you're on board for 1 week, that's just long enough to hate it. And, but you need to get over hating it, and the next couple of weeks do that, because you stop feeling so overwhelmed and you're useless, and then you actually learn a little bit and learn how to be useful and learn how to get into that community. And I was fortunate to get that, and then, more experiences like that in the future.
Right. Let's do this, Sam. Let's take a little break here on the show. We're going to come back, talk a little bit more, get more on your background, talk a little bit more about the ship and the program. And as listeners to the show regularly know, ostensibly, we talk about drinking food. We take a wide berth. I'm going to use that term. Yeah. There you go.
That's good.
No, thank you. Thank you very much. I'm a true professional. Yeah. And we'll talk a little bit about food and drink here on the ship, and how you all eat to survive and hopefully eat to enjoy and a little bit and all that.
Absolutely.
So, great. We're going to take a little break here on the show, friends. Come on back.
Market offers daily entertainment and delicious food and drink options throughout our 6-block district. Whether you crave raw oysters or fresh produce, authentic confections or healthy daiquiris, you can find it here. Sit at one of our cafes and hear live local music. Enjoy a muffaletta, po' boy, salad, or cheese plate in the farmers market. Check out our pop-up farmers markets on Wednesdays and Saturdays for even more fresh food options. History is being made fresh daily at the French Market. Visit frenchmarket.org for food, drink, retail, and event listings.
Are you looking for the best buns? Well, we have them at Bayou Burger in the Quarter. Wait till you bite into one of our acclaimed burgers like the Cowboy Burger, Tiebreaker Shrimp Burger, the world-famous Gator Burger, or you can build your own with endless combinations. It's all fresh meat, never ever frozen. Everywhere you look, there's big screen TVs where you'll never miss a minute of the action. Boasting the largest balcony dining in the French Quarter, you can watch all the action pass you by on the street. Find the best burgers in action at Bayou Burger. 501 Bourbon at St. Louis for the best buns on bourbon. It's Bayou Burger, baby.
Well, my bucket's got a hole in it. My bucket's got a hole in it. My bucket's got a hole.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with you. Thanks for tuning in. Yep, we are aboard the Picton Castle right here on the Mississippi River, participating in Tall Ships NOLA 2018, kind of loosely connected to the Navy Week going on at the same time, Tricentennial, of course, of New Orleans, chatting with Captain Sam Sikkema. And Sam, thanks again for having us aboard, and thanks for coming to New Orleans, by the way.
Yeah, absolutely. It was an honor to be invited to do this, and I never would have thought that actually we would have been taking the ship up the Mississippi River, but here we are.
Yeah, and how was that? Hey, buddy, how you doing? We got a guest. Who's our guest? What's your name?
Dawson.
Dawson? Do you live on the ship, Dawson?
Yeah.
Yeah?
And I live my home. He's called it Orange House.
Okay. Yeah.
And we got some food and fruits.
You got some food and fruits?
Yeah.
Wow.
We got some apples.
Yeah. Where'd you get that?
We got carrots.
Okay. Are you?
Potatoes.
Are you the cook? Do you run the galley here on the Picton Castle?
No, I'm a boy.
Okay, so you're learning though, right?
I'm B10. I'm a cooker.
Okay, well, thanks, Dawson. It was good to see you. It's great. So we had a special celebrity walk on here.
No, that's Dawson Moreland. He's Captain Moreland's son.
So okay, gotcha.
And he spent most of his life on the ship at this point. He's about half of his life, actually.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Do you like being on the ship, Dawson?
Yeah, going back home.
Okay, right. Well, great. Well, Sam, so you were talking about, when did you get involved with this ship specifically?
I first sailed in Picton Castle in 2012. We had big celebrations on the east coast of the U.S. for the War of 1812 and whatnot, and we were invited to a lot of festivals like this and whatnot. And then I've been on and off in the ship ever since. You know, I sailed as mate for a while, and then last 3 years about as captain. And
yeah. And how do people get involved if somebody wants to learn the trade and use this ship or this opportunity to do that? How do you do that? Does it come through applications?
There's various ways to do it. There's several organizations in the states that have lots of volunteer participation, and so you know you can go volunteer your time and get you know, usually it's a little bit more limited the amount of experience you can get doing that, but it's you can also, you know, a ship like this, if you can you know, get the trainee fees put together and come out to sea for this, you know, you'll learn the trade that way. Anybody who spends a year in Picton Castle can get hired anywhere else in one of these sailing ships.
Okay, yeah. And so I mean, because you're coming out with the skills that you need, and it's a desirable situation, a desirable employee.
Absolutely. And the ship has a good enough reputation that, you know, an employer knows when they see Picton Castle on your resume, they know exactly what skills people should be coming out with.
Gotcha. Okay. And do most people go into I'm assuming like merchant marine, not really merchant marine stuff, but
some of them
private stuff and things like that.
Yeah, you know, it's a variety. You know, the basis of seamanship, you know, works across the board, those foundational skills. So people come out of this, we've had people go on to a merchant maritime academy and then, you know, ship out as mates in the merchant service. And we've had people who, you know, go into yachts and yacht sailing. And and other people who have, you know, gone on to sailing this traditional sailing ships like we're doing here. So.
That's pretty neat. Now, Sam, and I know you feel free to not talk about this, but you're getting ready to venture into something else.
Yeah.
So you're transitioning off the ship right now.
I am, yeah. No, Captain Moreland will have the ship for the next year or so, and I'm heading off to sail the coast of Maine in the passenger trade up there with some of the oldest sailing vessels in the country. They're, you know, from around the turn of the 19th, 20th century. They're, you know, and they're working passenger ships taking people out sailing on the coast of Maine.
That's exciting.
It is. No, it's very cool, and it's a cool place to go sailing, and it's, you know, important to me to be part of that history of preserving the, you know, this marine preservation, preserving these ships and preserving the living memory of these ships and how they're operated.
Right. Gotcha. Well, now, you guys got, you pulled into port on Thursday, if I'm not mistaken,
mm-hmm,
right?
Yeah.
Now, and we talked about this a little bit because we had Aaron Short from Tall Ships America
on
the show last week, kind of leading up to this, and Aaron was saying, you know, we were talking about the Mississippi River, navigating the Mississippi River. How long did it take you guys once you turned into the river from the Gulf to get to here?
It took about 24 hours to make the transit up the river. And this time we had assistance from a tugboat. This time the river's running quite high.
Yes, especially right now. Very
high. And so it is challenging for a vessel like this to be able to make enough speed to make that river transit. So for about two-thirds of it, we had a tugboat helping us. Which is actually the traditional way to do it. You know, even by the end of the 19th century, these vessels were all picked up at Southwest Pass by a tugboat and drug up the river because it could take 2 weeks to get here under sail, you know, waiting for the right winds and waiting for the right currents. And so I like to say we did it the traditional way and got a tugboat to pull us up.
I like that. It's sensible. You want to get here, right?
Yeah,
and you can see the city, right?
Right.
At a certain point. So you want to.
Exactly.
And we were talking about this a little bit too, because I'm sure that with the river pilots, it was a nice change of pace, I'm going to guess.
Yeah, and I really have to hand it to the Crescent River Pilot Association. You know, they provided all the pilots free of charge, and they were all really helpful and really great guys, and it was really nice to have them on board. And yeah, I think they had some fun too.
That's cool. Well, how about yourself? So you got here, and have you had a chance, now that the main event with the programming is over, have you had a chance to get around the city a little bit?
Yeah, I have. I've been fortunate that I've been to New Orleans several times in my life, and I've always really enjoyed coming here. But like I said earlier, you know, it's a special way to coming in by sea,
So this is the first time you've ever sailed into New Orleans?
Second time,
okay.
Actually. But it's, and, you know, to be here right in the heart of things in the French Quarter and be able to, yeah, just just walk off the ship and a couple of blocks up to have amazing food and cocktails and be in the atmosphere of street musicians. And it's really cool.
That is really neat. Yeah. It's a great city, and we appreciate you being here for the tricentennial. Let's talk about this, and we'll move into this in the next thing. We got about 3 minutes or so before we take a break. As I said before, as everybody knows, this is generally supposed to be a show about food and drink. Living with 50 or so people on in cramped quarters and so on and so forth, how does that work? How does everybody keep a full stomach and keep happy, sustained, and maybe satiated to a certain degree?
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's, of course, you know, you're working very hard at times on the vessel, and you know, it creates quite an appetite. We have we're very fortunate. We have a full time cook on board. A chef, really, and he's been with the ship for almost 10 years now. He's West Indian. He's from Grenada. He's really good at being able to make a good hearty cuisine that keeps people fed.
Right.
And especially in, you know, in hot weather and in the tropics when that can get difficult. He's very good at it. And, you know, in all these different places we go around the world, and he'll have to, you know, cook for 50 people. 3 times a day for up to 40 days. We'll do these long passages out in the South Pacific and the Indian Ocean, where we'll be a little over a month at sea. And he's very good at being able to, you know, pull that together. And it's amazing, because even on the last day coming into port, you know, we've been out 35, 40 days, and he'll pull steaks out of the freezer and we'll have an amazing meal.
Wow. So he's your guy.
Yeah, right?
You
absolutely
want to keep him happy.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I imagine that's what, as you're saying, it's very challenging, I'm going to guess. And then is it when you pull into a port, are you already pretty well lined up and knowing where you're going to be able to source stuff? Or is there that time where it's sort of walking around, going to the markets and figuring out what you can get on board and use?
It really depends on where we're at. And that's one of the, you know, when we come into a city like this, there's, you know, there's people who provision these ships, and they're the norm, you know, so we work through an agent who does that sort of, and it's a little bit less sort of market based. But when we go out, you know, into the South Pacific and these tropical islands, you go to the little markets and food stands and you meet somebody who says, oh yeah, my uncle has a papaya tree in his backyard. You can, you know, take, and, you know, or we know where to get bananas and stuff like that. And, you know, the baker down the street there, that's where you want to go to get some bread. And so it becomes a much more interesting cultural experience in order to provision the ship, because you're dealing with all these locals and then people who have a really, a fascination with what we're doing. And you can meet a lot of people and have a pretty interesting time by, you know, just trying to keep the ship provisioned.
That's pretty cool. And obviously, I'm guessing that the chef is in charge of that.
Yes.
But then does he grab some of y'all to come and help?
Absolutely. Yeah. It's a big job to keep everybody on the ship fed, and it's part of the experience is also understanding that job. And we actually have, you know, he doesn't work 20. You know, he doesn't work straight time. He'll get one day off every week, no matter what.
Yeah.
And so the crew will rotate through participating in the cooking, and which always make, you know, sometimes they make something a little bit different than he does, or but it's important for them to understand the challenges of what he's going through and how that works. And yeah, absolutely, we, you know, bring a whole mess of people with us sometimes when we have to get off the ship and, you know, essentially go to the market and hand carry everything back.
There's that.
Yeah.
So let's hold that thought, Sam. Let's take another break. We're chatting with Captain Sam Sikkema, who is here on the Picton Castle, and we're talking about provisioning ships, keeping people fed and happy. We'll probably talk about doing some drinking too in a little bit here. Come on back.
Hey ladies, are you looking for wine to bring to your next girls' night out? Grab a bottle of Capitello Wines and enjoy the taste of fruit from Oregon's Willamette Valley. Capitello has a wide variety of wines to choose from: Sauvignon Blanc, Pinot Noir, dessert wine, and a Brut Sparkling that's a blend of Pinot Noir and Chardonnay. He'll even stop by next time he's in town. So grab the girls, have fun, and enjoy Capitello Wine. Cheers.
Locally inspired and nationally recognized, Dickie Brennan Steakhouse is located in the French Quarter. Dickie Brennan Steakhouse serves USDA prime beef, Gulf seafood, and innovative Creole dishes. Come experience why Maxim magazine and Playboy named it among the nation's top steakhouses. Running short on time? The full menu is available in the bar for quicker and more casual dining. Dickie Brennan's 5 After 5 Happy Hour Special is back. Dickie Brennan Steakhouse is located in the French Quarter at 716 Iberville.
Oh, well, I'm sitting here la la waiting for my ya-ya. Oh, I'm sitting here la la waiting for my ya-ya. Oh, it may sound funny, but I don't believe she's coming. Oh, oh, baby, hurry, don't make me worry.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with you, WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land, wherever you may be. We are on board the sailing ship, the Picton Castle. 1927, Sam, you said?
1928.
1928, excuse me. We're sitting with Captain Sam Sikkema, and we're talking about, and we've moved into the food, the provisioning, some of the challenges, and some of the delights, too, involved in this, where you pull into a port in the South Pacific, and you're finding fresh produce and these things, and there's a creative component in this.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, it's always amazing the places that you go in the world where you find out the things that are plentiful. You know, especially you get into these tropical islands where at first people are being really gracious by, you know, giving us all these, you know, fresh fruits and produce, and then you realize that this stuff is so plentiful on these islands that they're happy to have somebody to give it to, because it would just all go to waste otherwise.
Right.
And and just sort of understanding, culturally how the food affects the life on the islands and the places that we go. It's really fascinating, and we, you know, get to be a part of that, and that's one of the best things is to, you know, just go off and sample the local fare every time you pull into port.
Yeah, right. How would it work then, say, like, what would a special treat be, just as an example? Because I'm assuming, like you mentioned, coming in at the end and chef pulls out some steaks or things like that.
Yeah.
Is there something where every once in a while you're looking to break it up and not just do sort of the regular fare?
Yeah, well, I'd say, you know, usually it's, just hiding ice cream in the freezers, you know, in hot tropical right. weather, that, you know, and you haven't had sweets for a long time. The crew goes crazy over that. No, we're always trailing lines behind us, so if we can catch fresh fish occasionally, and, you know, especially you get out into the tropical waters and, catching mahi and, and wahoo and, you know, the fish being a West Indian cook, he's, you know, excellent at cooking that stuff.
And he knows his way around some spices, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, that's a treat. Okay.
Exactly. And so that's a real treat when we haul a fresh fish over the rail.
Yeah. So, and that's a nice thing, too, some of the circumtropical stuff that you just mentioned. So the preparation method can work just about anywhere as long as he's got the spice cabinet.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, right. So what about with the drink stuff, too? I know when you guys pull in a port, you get a little bit of time off. Do you guys normally, you know, we talk about cocktails, Sam, on this show. So do you guys normally carry a supply of beer and things like that, too?
Or the ship at sea is, we're not drinking at sea. Once in a while, we'll have, when we're off, the conditions are really light and easy. We'll have, you know, maybe just a little tot of rum somewhere, but
okay,
you know, just to have a little celebrate what we've been doing. But it's when we pull into port, it's again, that's a time to, you know, sample whatever the local drink fare is, and that can always be quite interesting too, because it's so different in every place around the world.
Yeah. So let's talk about some of your favorite places that you've been then, as it relates to, let's kind of put that food and drink spin on it.
Sure. Well, you know, especially when you get to, you know, Central America is always interesting because it's a lot of, especially going to Panama, it's a very multinational, multicultural
right.
place. And so you get a lot of interesting, you know, you get sort of the, you know, tequilas coming from the north and, you know, sort of that sort of stuff. And a lot of, you know, fried chicken's very popular in that sort of parts of the world. But you get off into the South Pacific and, you know, it's really hit and miss with what they can get. But there's that French influence down in a lot of the South Pacific that's amazing, that you go to these stores where you have amazing wine and cheese and, you know, Poisson Cru in a lot of places, and just that French influence produces a lot of really fantastic food and drink. And then once you get off, you get out around Australia and off, even off to the coast of Africa, it gets even different. Then I was surprised when we went to South Africa that, you know, whiskey distilling is popular down there.
Yeah, right.
And there's around the Cape there's a lot of whiskey distilleries and whatnot. It's interesting. You know, wine's very popular. There's excellent, you know, the Pinotage, the local South African wine, is just amazing down there. And, you know, most of these places, a lot of, you know, some of the Atlantic islands have their little different wines that they make on the island and whatnot.
I'm always interested in spending some time in some of these parts of the world that you mentioned, where you'll get the local distillate, or it's some, you know, presumably maybe a sugarcane distillate or something like that, with some fruit mixed in or some herbs mixed in. That's really common, I think, through much of the tropics, isn't it?
It is, yeah. Yeah, well, and it's an easy way to have some sort of local flavor, because while whatever you're distilling may not be uncommon, Adding fruit, like you say, is very common and popular to create something local and unique, and that can be pretty interesting a lot of times.
Right. So when you guys fish and have the lines off the back, how does that, you got 50 people on board, so how does it work? Are you always able to catch meaning that everybody's going to get to eat what's caught? I mean, that's pretty
not
challenging from a fishing standpoint.
Necessarily, that's okay. Right. And I like to, we do a lot of fishing, but we don't necessarily do a lot of catching. It sort of depends on how, if we have somebody on board who's really into the fishing and really into, making it work, we usually do a little bit better. But sometimes it's an appetizer if it's just one fish, and sometimes it's a full meal if it's a couple or quite a large. You can get a large Dorado that's big enough to actually serve
to
almost
feed just
50
about
people.
Everybody. Yeah, right. Yeah, absolutely. I've seen a few of those. Yeah. So tell us, Sam, a little bit about where is the ship going when you pull out of port here, and what's the journey going to look like?
Yeah. So they're starting this, like I said, the seventh world voyage is starting here. There's almost a whole new crew signed on, and they're all excited about getting going. So they'll transit down the Mississippi River, and then it's off to Panama after that. You get to go through the Panama Canal and spend some time enjoying, Panama City and Balboa, the old city there. It actually reminds me a lot of New Orleans because it is such a multicultural influence, and there's lots of very interesting bars and wine and drink and all different kinds of things. But after that, it's out into the South Pacific. You go down to the Galapagos Islands and then out to Pitcairn, some of the most remote places in the world that you get to visit going these places out through French Polynesia. Around the top of Australia, usually stop in Bali and Indonesia.
Okay.
And then it's off across the Indian Ocean, and there's a couple of islands that, we get to stop at Rodriguez and Mauritius, Reunion Island.
Yeah, yeah.
Which are all, again, there's the French influence.
That's
there.
That's a nice place to pull in.
Yeah, absolutely. And then it's off to Africa. Sometimes the ship is able to stop in Mozambique, and we always stop in Cape Town in South Africa, okay. which is an amazing city for, especially for food and drink. The food that you can get, like the barbecue, they call the braai.
Yeah, the braai, yep.
In South Africa is... Yeah. All different, it's ostrich meat and, all these different amazing things that you don't get in North America. It's fascinating. And then on up the South Atlantic, it stopped St. Helena. We stopped on the Namibian coast of Africa.
Oh, in Namibia, okay.
Right. And then after a couple of stops in the Atlantic Islands, it's on up to the West Indies, and you usually spend a month, sort of wind jamming the West Indies and enjoying the islands there. And after that, it's back to Lunenburg for finishing that circumnavigation around the world.
Wow. So about how long do we look at?
About 13 months.
About 13 months. Yeah. Okay, give or take with winds and everything and all of that. Well, that's great. Well, do me a favor, Sam. We got about 2 minutes left before we take a break. Can you tell people where they can find more information about the ship and the program and everything online?
Yep, absolutely. It's picton-castle.com and the ship's itineraries and a lot of information about the ship. Of course, are on Facebook at Picton Castle, and there's a lot of posting pictures from the voyage. We send updates from live from the ship every day, and so show you a little bit about what we're doing and a little picture about what life is like on board. And that's the best way to follow us.
You guys like on Instagram and all that kind of stuff too?
Oh yeah, I have to say, sort of being despite my age, I'm not really electronically savvy enough to somebody had to explain to me what Instagram was. So the ship's Instagram and Pinterest, and I think there's even a Twitter account. So the office is good about keeping the ship into the modern world.
Yeah, there you go, and you get the updates from the sea, which is really cool. And I'm going to get some pictures from port and all that kind of stuff as well.
Yeah.
Well, Sam, thanks so much for having us aboard today. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you for stopping by. It's been a real pleasure for the ship to be here in New Orleans and the whole tricentennial. It's a really exciting period, so we're glad to be here.
Yeah, thanks for being a part of it. We really appreciate it. Friends, that's Captain Sam Sikkema, who is going to embark on a new adventure himself, moving up to Maine, and going to do some really cool stuff. So thanks for having us here. Friends, we're going to take a little break here on the NOLA Drink Show, and we'll be back in just a little bit. Come on back.
Are you looking for a great place to enjoy great handcrafted and vintage cocktails? Victory is located at 339 Barone Street in the heart of downtown New Orleans. We have a variety of spirits, a talented team of bartenders, and great gourmet small plates. Our mission? To preserve an era when cocktails were made with artistry and pride. Grab your friends and come enjoy the ultimate cocktail experience. Give us a call to book your next private event or go to our website, victorynola.com. See you soon. Cheers.
Hey, New Orleans, Jack Jelenko here, local wine guy. If you're listening to this show, you love good food and good wine. And a great wine with our plentiful fresh Gulf seafood is the Domaine St. Rose Coquille Blanc, a crisp, balanced white blend from the south of France. Whether it's with fresh oysters, crab, redfish, or shrimp, this Domaine St. Rose Coquille Blanc will not disappoint. And it's a great value at around $14. Domaine St. Rose Coquille Blanc. Cheers.
Night before last, I got loaded on a bottle of whiskey, on a bottle of whiskey. Night before last, I got loaded on a bottle of whiskey, on a bottle of whiskey.
Tim McNally, welcome to the Dine, Wine, and Spirit Show, NOLA Drinks Edition. Here's your host, Brian Diaz.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with you, WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land wherever you may be. Thanks for tuning in, as always, friends, to the show here today. And if you're listening at the top of the show, and I hope you were, we are here chatting with Chris Shaggy Davis, who is the owner of NOLA Crawfish King and also the man behind the New Orleans Crawfish Festival going on this weekend, man, coming up, Central City Barbecue.
Yeah, it's actually April 30th, May 1st, and May 2nd. It's the Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday in between the two Jazz Fest weekends.
Okay, that's right. I got to get that straight. I keep thinking it's the weekend, but
yeah,
it's
not. Right?
Yeah, yeah. You got to avoid Jazz Fest, right? That's a good point.
I do have to avoid Jazz Fest, but the reasoning behind it is because, I mean, both you and I know that people don't just come here anymore for a weekend of Jazz Fest. People come to New Orleans, and now they're like staying the entire time, being that there's, you know, all the after shows and, you know, all the stuff happening in between, you know, the two weekends, and just being New Orleans is awesome. But we wanted to give the out-of-towners and locals alike a place to come and, you know, get down
on those three days. Off days.
Yeah, yeah, they are off, they are off days, and you know, the out of towner, they don't get to really experience a great crawfish boil, or, and it's, you know, we have really great talent playing, you know, all New Orleans bands.
Who's on the guy? I know you got Tab Benoit.
Tab Benoit headlines on Wednesday. We have John Cleary headlines on Tuesday. Samantha Fish, Ivan Neville and Friends featuring George Porter. A lot of stellar acts.
That's really cool, man. And how many years have you been doing the festival?
This is the third year of the NOLA Crawfish Festival. My business, NOLA Crawfish King, and myself, I do some work, I dabble in the music business, but, you know, I've always done, for at least the last 15 years, I've always done, my business has always put together, like, after Jazz Fest events, stuff like that. And they were called things like, you know, Crawfish Madness, or, you know,
just so you're always kind of like tying in a boil or tying
always
in crawfish,
tying in a boil. Yeah. And okay, it's always been very successful. And I did some research online, and I found that there's never been a New Orleans Crawfish Festival,
which is, when you figure that we have everything from a mac and cheese to everything else festival, that's remarkable.
It's like ding, ding, ding in my head. Yeah, no, it was really, I was like, all right, this is crazy.
Wait, how did that happen? Yeah. Did somebody die?
So, I mean, I jumped right on the opportunity, and, you know, I went through all the proper channels, and, you know, I made it mine. So
that's cool.
I'm excited to, this will be the third year. We've had, the first year was held at, you know, we like to tie in craft beers, New Orleans music, and crawfish music and beer. And you know, that's our thing. And the first year we worked with NOLA Brewing Company. Mm-hmm. Great.
Yep.
Last year we worked with NOLA Brewing Company, decided to this year switch it up a little bit. We have Port Orleans there as the main beer vendor sponsor, and it's held at Central City Barbecue.
Yep.
And great space over there, and we're stoked. We just, we pray for the weather that we have right now.
This would be great. Yeah, we're taping a little bit in advance, friends, if you don't know, and it's a beautiful day. We'll keep our fingers crossed that that's going to work. Well, Chris, tell us, how'd you get involved in the crawfish business then, man?
All right, so, I've always just been a fan of crawfish, and I guess 25 years, 20-something years ago now, I used to get my crawfish from a place called King Rogers, which used to be on St. Claude Avenue and the split on Rampart
there.
And I would just, when I first moved here, it would be me and some guys hanging out in the backyard, drinking some beers, going to pick up some boiled crawfish, whatever. And eventually I kind of asked the owner, like, hey, would you teach me? We became friendly, and I was like, hey, would you teach me how to do this? And he said, sure, I'll send my son over. He came over and I scored a cut off keg, like a keg cut in half.
Yeah.
And I probably ground scored it or something. And put together a rig and he came over and we sat around and he showed me how to do it. And, the parties on Sundays, lived uptown. In the 13th Ward, and this is back in 1991, and we had a party and another party and another party, and eventually, someone said, "Hey, can you come over to my house and do this?" And at the time, I was like, "Never, didn't," and he paid for it and paid me a little bit of money to do it, and I was like, "All right, bam, we can do this." And years went by, and I worked at Port of Call on Esplanade Avenue for 18 years.
Okay.
Back then it was really lax scheduling and stuff. So I could take on a catering gig and still, or I would say, all right, I'll be back after Mardi Gras, or I'll be back after Jazz Fest. And it was like that
for years and years.
Okay. Yeah. And, I guess, about 10 years ago, let's just say this. Before Katrina, we were doing really well. And then I was still working at Port of Call and doing my business. And then Katrina came, kind of, stirred up the pot a little bit. And then I had some life changes and decided that Port of Call wasn't going to, I needed to move on. Mm-hmm. And decided to go, full on.
So was this right after Katrina Chris,
About 8 years ago. Yeah.
Okay, gotcha.
Yep.
All right, cool.
And since then, the NOLA Crawfish King is very successful. We travel nationwide. We bring Louisiana to you. And anywhere Southwest Airlines flies, we ship. We have big pots on the East Coast and big pots on the West Coast. Stuff like Denver and, those middle states, we tend to drive the rigs up there.
Sure.
But we're extremely busy. I just got home from Vermont. We leave for Denver right after Jazz Fest. We do Chicago. I do a bunch of large music festivals around the country. Bonnaroo, Electric Forest, Lock-In, all that kind of stuff. And mostly private.
Okay. People want to have a New Orleans or
Louisiana promoters will bring us into the festivals, and we do stuff like the Tulane alumni in New York or whatever.
Sure. Okay.
So they want to have New Orleans be a part of it. And my company, NOLA Crawfish King, we not only do the seafood, but we also do a bunch of Louisiana favorites, jambalaya, and most of it's on site. A lot of kettle cooking, stuff like that.
That's pretty cool, man. So so the whole the thrust of the gig then is that you're going out and you're putting on boils and parties, bringing Louisiana to people.
Yes.
Okay, cool.
Yes. Yeah, and it's crazy. I mean, 2 weeks ago I was on Stratton Mountain in Vermont. When I lit the pot, it was 28 degrees and snow was everywhere, and I was like, in the back of my head going, oh my God, this is no good. I need to get out of here. You know, but but watching the people's, you know, watching them react to seeing like live crawfish and yeah, I mean, they tackled it. We did a couple thousand pounds and it was like, boom.
You know, I'm thinking, Chris, that if you go back there, you need to contact Guinness Book of World Records for the world's coldest crawfish boil, because that might have been it.
I'll show you some pictures. I'll show you some pictures after the fact, and you'll be like, wow. It was crazy, yeah.
That's pretty cool. So, and let's do this. We got about a minute left.
Okay.
So we're going to talk about, you and I are going to come back. Let's talk a little bit about the crawfish industry after we take this break. Yeah. And talk a little bit, for listeners that don't know, let's talk a little bit about a boil, how it works. And I talk a little bit about the industry. Okay. And then I think talk about the season and then kind of talk about how, you know, the season kind of seems to go year round now. You can do it year round if you want to do it year round.
The climate has changed.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. There we go, both literally and figuratively. Yeah. Friends, we're going to take a little break here on the NOLA Drink Show. We're chatting with Chris Shaggy Davis of New Orleans Crawfish King and also the man behind, the organizer behind NOLA Crawfish Fest, coming up next Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday between the weekends of Jazz Fest. Come on back.
Things have been a little rough, but there's still in the bayou. He can whip up a Cubillon, whistling surely blown in his poor man's paradise. So in this
savory crab meat cheesecake and decadent white chocolate bread pudding are Palace Cafe originals. For nearly 26 years, Palace Cafe has been serving award-winning cuisine in the historic Warline Music Building. Located on Canal Street at the edge of the French Quarter, Palace Cafe is open 7 days a week for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and open for jazz brunch on the weekends. Make sure to try one of their refined classic cocktails or a glass of wine from their nationally recognized wine list. Palace Cafe is located at 605 Canal Street.
Looking for a bottle of wine to impress your friends and family? Miro Cellars from California's Russian River Valley is the perfect wine for any occasion. Miro Cellars searches the region for the finest grapes to make their one-of-a-kind specialty wines. Award-winning winemaker Miro Chelikov considers the particular geology and seasonal climate of each vineyard when selecting the most interesting grapes the region has to offer. Because Miro has complete freedom to make precisely the wines he loves best, the results are spectacular. Let yourself in on one of the best-kept secrets in wine today. Miro Cellars.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with you. Thanks for tuning in today. We are chatting with Chris Davis from NOLA Crawfish King. And Chris, for I think a lot of us around here in Southeast Louisiana and New Orleans have pretty good familiarity with crawfish and crawfish season. Mm-hmm. But for those listeners that are outside the area, even for those of us that are here, let's talk a little bit about the run of the season. How does that go?
Okay, well, like you were mentioning before you went to break, was that, you know, these days, crawfish season for me, I used to not even boil crawfish until March.
Yeah, okay.
And, all right, March, and then usually I do Bonnaroo Music and Arts Festival, and that's normally the middle of June. And that was always
kind of the end, right?
That was typically, like the end. Yeah. That was like the crapshoot. I was like, is it going to be too hot to get crawfish? But, you know, we always managed to get through. So, till June, and that was it. So, over the years, I guess, when was the last time the Super Bowl was here in New Orleans?
That's a great question.
5 years, maybe?
Yeah, 2010, something like that. There's a guess.
Let's just say, all right, 2010.
Like that, yeah.
Well, back then, I realized I was boiling in January. Like, I was like, you know, I look back at it now, like, I was boiling in January. I was doing a bunch of Super Bowl parties and, you know, for CBS and all those TV, you know, stations and stuff. And I was like, wow, I'm boiling in January. And then a couple years went by, and it just continued. And it was great because I was like, Mardi Gras for me, I was like, I wasn't boiling crawfish, but now I am.
Mm-hmm.
And it helps my business, obviously. Then, you know, it's all good. And then, for instance, this year, I was boiling in January, and then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, boom, we're freezing here. Crawfish are like, what is happening? And they go back into the ground. Now, when they wouldn't be coming out of the ground until March anyways. Mm-hmm. So I'll just give you a rundown on how it starts for here. So Louisiana is a large rice producer. We produce a lot of rice in the state.
Yep.
Okay. The rice farmers, you know, they, let's just say they double dip. So they produce their rice, and then they fill their rice fields up with water, and then they farm crawfish. Mm-hmm. And then it's kind of like a cycle, okay? So in the beginning of the season, it's not hot, right? So they fill up their let's say, we'll call them ponds, rice fields.
Yep.
We call them crawfish ponds.
Yep.
Anyways, so they fill them up, they fish those, right? And then that starts the season. The farmer pretty much, you know, sets the price for the season. Okay.
Is this a kind of a speculative thing where people are going to guess what they think the yield's going to be?
Yeah, well, the yield, if they're actually, you know, are they fishing in the cold weather? You know, there's all kinds of little,
okay.
Let's just say they're finicky or whatever, you know. It's just, who knows how they feel that day, you know. And that's, you know, but it's kind of, I feel like that. So, and, you know, weather has a lot to do with it. So, you know, they fish those, right, and then it starts to get hotter and hotter. And then the snow melt from up north comes down through the Mississippi Valley, blah, 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 fills up with water all our spillways, all our rivers, you know, all that stuff comes south, obviously. Mm-hmm. And being we're at the very bottom here of the Mississippi, you know, it fills it all up. And then by the time that happens, it's really hot here. And the water in the rice fields, which is only, let's say, a foot and a half deep, okay, that starts to, you know, dry up. And then by that time, when the rice fields dry up, then the rivers and stuff are full. So then they start right. fishing them. Okay. So it comes a point where you're like, where I would personally be getting like all farmer is crawfish, and then it kind of mixes up a little bit. And then next thing you know, I'm not getting any more farm raised. I'm just getting spillway and atchafalaya based in crawfish, stuff like that.
And so there are businesses that specialize then in getting the wild stuff.
Yes,
as well.
Definitely. Yes, sir. Okay. Yeah. So they do that. And my company, Nola Crawfish King, we go through a broker who shops all over West Louisiana. And, you know, crawfish are graded. So, you know, you can buy, like right now, I think the going price, let's just say, the going price is $1.55.
Okay.
To
a wholesale.
Just say a market here in town is $1.55.
Gotcha. Fair enough. Right. Okay.
But when I go to my broker, I can purchase crawfish at 79 cents a pound.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay.
So at 79 cents, they call them peelers, or then they grade them up. You know, if I want, you know, Bell River crawfish or Atchafalaya Basin, all that kind of, they grade them.
Okay. Yep.
So my company gets to choose.
Gotcha. And it depends on what you're trying to accomplish with your event, right?
And there's some restaurants around town that only get big crawfish, and they're the good ones. Yeah. And you'll be paying more for the crawfish inside a restaurant, obviously. And, you know, but with my business, I mean, just last weekend we boiled over 8,000 pounds of crawfish.
Wow. Yeah.
So, you know, we tend to, let's just say, mix them. And it gives that way the client who's buying 4,000 pounds of crawfish isn't having to pay a ton of money. You know, we're going to give them a great product, but it's going to be a mixed bag, you know.
Gotcha.
Unless they ask me, oh, can we get 4,000 pounds of selects? And I'd be like, oh, yeah, no
absolutely
problem.
No problem.
Gotcha. We can do
right
this.
Here. Yeah. Well, it's interesting because you know this, Chris, one of the main conversations we always have here in Southeast or in Louisiana in general, but in New Orleans and everywhere around here. When we come into the season, the conversation is, what's the price going to be?
Yeah.
Why at the beginning of the season is the price so high? The conversation after Easter, because Easter is always a big day for crawfish boil, it's going to go down. So as much as we like to talk about food here and what we're going to have for dinner, we talk about crawfish, price per pound and all that every season, and it does fluctuate quite a bit, doesn't it?
No, it does. I mean, I was paying, before we had the freeze in January, right? It was January. Mm-hmm. I was paying pretty good price, you know. Mm-hmm. I matched up to last year, let's say, and then the minute the freeze happened, boom, it was like, okay, $4 a pound.
Wow.
You know, and then you're buying crawfish for $4 a pound, and you've booked the boils, or for in my instance, you know, my company, we booked the boils, and you know, we quote a client so much or whatever, and then all of a sudden you got to go back to the client and be like, hey, you know, we it's market price, obviously. They know that. But then you're like, oh, well, crawfish were $2.50, but now they're $4.50.
Well, like you said, I think it bears repeating. I mean, we were talking about a number being around $1.55 a pound and then a number being around $4 a pound. That's a significant
And the freeze this year hurt us, and it hurt the business a little bit, and definitely the farmers. But now it's really in full gear, man. It's awesome, actually. A lot of crawfish.
And it's been a good season, hasn't it? It has been a good season.
Yep. And, you know, the way the weather is right now, it's beautiful out. I mean, it is not hot. And, you know, we're going to knock on wood somewhere around here. But it's not hot. And it's really beautiful outside. I'm actually in a long sleeve hoodie, and which is very rare this time of year.
Yeah.
So with that being said, I'm going to speculate that the crawfish season will go longer. Let's say July.
July. Knock on wood there. That's good. That's good for your business, too.
July
right?
It is, yeah.
Yeah. And, I want to emphasize that point, too, for listeners, because you're thinking, okay, well, you know, maybe we call it a $2.50 fluctuation in pounds.
Yeah.
And you're thinking, okay, well, that's not that big a deal per head. Well, big crawfish eaters are eating pounds, plural, at a boil. So it's not like we're talking about, it's just another $2 a head.
Yeah.
You know, we could be talking $6-$8 a head difference.
Right. And our company, Nola Crawfish King, my company, we quote people normally 3 pounds a person, unless you're from out of town, you know, and then 1 or 2 pounds, whatever. And we try and give them jambalaya and gumbo and all the things that, you know, we want them to experience New Orleans the right way.
There you go.
It's crazy. People, like I said, we just about 8,000 pounds last weekend, and it's great when I get when I get that bill on Monday, and I'm like, wow, really, I owe you that much money?
Right.
Okay, we can do this.
Well, Chris, let's do this. Let's take another break, and then we're going to come back, talk with you a little bit more. We're going to talk about how a boil goes down, and then we're going to remind you how you can go to the Nola Crawfish Festival next week, kicking off on Monday, friends. We're going to take a little break here. Yeah, take a little break here on the Nola, what is this show called? It's the Nola Drink Show. Brian Diaz here with you, chatting with Chris Shaggy Davis of Nola Crawfish King. Come on back.
Hi, this is Kevin Richards with Sazerac Rye Whiskey. It's football and festival season, and there's no better way to enjoy Sazerac Rye than in a pothole cocktail. Just fill up a glass with ice and your favorite root beer, and add 2 ounces of Sazerac Rye for a truly tasty toddy. Named after the city's most iconic of inconveniences, the pothole is proof that New Orleans never takes itself too seriously. Sazerac Rye Whiskey, the way New Orleans does whiskey.
Hey, New Orleans, Jack Jelenko here, local wine guy. Want a great alternative to Over Oak Chardonnay? Try Yamhill Valley Vineyards Pinot Blanc, a wonderfully balanced white wine from the oldest family estate in McMinnville, Oregon, in the Willamette Valley. It's round and ripe like a Chardonnay, but without the heavy oak and sweetness of big commercial corporate Chardonnays. Yamhill Valley Vineyard Pinot Blanc, a great value under $20. Ask for it wherever you buy wine. Cheers. Son of a gun,
all right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with you, WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land, wherever you may be. Yeah, we are right here in the heart of the crawfish season, friends, and I couldn't think of a better person to be on than Chris Shaggy Davis from Nola Crawfish King. And so we talked a little bit about the festival. We're going to come back to that in a second, Chris, and then you kind of gave us the rundown of how the typical season works. Mm. Let's tell people, especially for folks that don't know, out of the area, maybe new to the area, how does a boil go down?
Oh, wow. Well,
that's
it depends
and
on
who. We fight about that here too. Price per pound, all that stuff.
I mean, being a catering company, you know, we're doing it for people. My company, we show up. You don't have to do anything. We do it all for you. You know,
like the mechanics. You know,
the mechanics. Listen, so you know, we're on a much. My company, we're much bigger scale, but you know, New Orleans, it's a get together. It's to bring people together. You know. You can get crawfish anywhere. You know, it's like everyone has crawfish. Everyone boils.
Right.
You know, every job I go on, someone's got
their seasonal company party.
Did your company parties, weddings, you name it, funerals I've done. Like, it's just what it is. It brings people together. But we always, when I show up to a gig, always someone's got to tell you, like, oh, no, I do it this way. Or everyone's got their own way, you know. Everyone's got a different way. I tend to use a more traditional recipe. You know, I work with Louisiana Fish Fry.
Okay. Yep.
They take care of me, and I take care of them. Mm-hmm. And, we have a good relationship. So I use that product. And some people make their own boil seasoning.
Right.
Some people don't. Some people use Zatarain. Some people don't. Right. Some people use Cajun Land.
Right.
Some people don't.
Right.
You know, I use a lot of citrus in my boils.
Okay.
Some people use, they don't. They use a lot of
oranges, lemons,
oranges,
grapefruit.
Lemons, grapefruit.
I love grapefruit, man.
I mean, yeah. I've done some crazy things in the boils. I know. I before Jason Scyther used to do the maple leaf. I did the maple leaf boils.
Okay.
And Hank up there that owns the maple leaf. I mean. Throw some crazy stuff in there, you know, pig heads and duck feet and whatever, But you know, all kinds of different things.
So we're doing, we're taking the crawfish, right? We're, usually you rinse them, you soak them in water.
Yes.
And then we're going to put them in a big pot.
Correct.
And
you know, you bring them
burner.
To, and you bring the water to a boil, you add your seasoning. First thing that goes in the pot is the potatoes because they cook longer.
Yeah.
Then you would add your celery and your oranges or lemons all that kind of stuff.
Sausage if
you're doing it.
Corn.
It just depends. Corn is always last for me because we use a frozen corn, which helps cool the pot.
Okay.
Instead of adding water or ice or what, you know, some people do it differently.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't want to water down our product. So we use a frozen corn, and usually we're using like hundreds of ears, you know, so it does cool the pot. But you put the crawfish in, cook 5 minutes till it comes back to a boil, shut it off. And then add whatever you're going to add to cool the pot, and then you let them soak. And I believe the key is letting them soak. The longer they soak, the better they are.
And that flavor soaks in.
And then the flavor soaks in.
The acidity from the citrus gets in there.
All
that,
it really does it up, you know. And it makes for a good product. But I think the key to a good crawfish boil is, the soak time. And not using too much salt, you know. A lot of people tend to use a lot of salt.
I could not agree with you more on that, Chris.
Yeah.
And that's another, I know, one of those debates.
Yeah.
But if you're seasoning that sucker right, you don't need to use that much salt, and it becomes unpleasant.
Yeah, it does. It does come unpleasant. And you know, Nola Crawfish King, we want you to taste the crawfish. We want, because I mean, the crawfish tastes good. And if you're just killing it with salt or spices, a lot of people are like, oh, make them hot. It's like. We don't do that. We want it to have a little heat to it, but like we want you to be able to taste the crawfish. We want you to enjoy the flavors that we've, you know, boiled them in. And I think that when you, like you said, when you add salt, a lot of salt.
Yeah.
And there's some myths about like purging the crawfish and let's purge the crawfish in salt water. Well, they're a freshwater animal. Yeah. It's going to kill them.
Right.
So whoever thinks that is the way to do it, and don't let anyone kid you. It's not the way, okay? And, I mean, that's like my friends back when I was much younger, we used to do lobsters, and we'd put them in freshwater, and it would be like, duh. A friend of ours did that, not me.
Yeah.
But a friend of ours put them in freshwater, and I was like, yeah, it's not going to happen, man. They're going to die. But, so, you know, there's all kinds of ways. Nola Crawfish King, all of our crawfish are walked and washed. They have to walk the plank into the sack.
Okay.
You know, but first they walk the plank into a tub that has water circulating. They sit in there. It's cleaner than where they came from.
Yeah, sure.
And then instead of, because we're, like I said, we're doing, like, just say 4,000 pounds at a time. No one's got that. But my supplier, my broker, does that for me.
Okay, gotcha.
And, you know, so,
And there we go. And then
That's it. Yeah. And then, you know, there's all kinds of ways. You put dump them across the table. You can put them, real quick. West Louisiana, for instance, they do crawfish differently. They don't boil crawfish in seasoned water. They season them after the fact.
Okay.
All right. They put them in a cooler, dump the seasoning over top, shake it around. Boom. There's your crawfish. Here where we live, and let's say central Louisiana, you know, we're boiling them in seasoned water, and then you let them soak.
Macerating them soak.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like it that way.
Yeah. Me too. You know, but I also like, you know, I have some favorite places in Brobridge, and like the fruit stand is a favorite of mine, and they do that same thing. Dynamite dust or whatever they call it, and then they add hot sauce over top of them.
I'm a fan of that stuff. Good too. I do like that too.
And go ahead.
Chris, I was gonna say we got about 2.5 minutes left here, so let's circle back on the festival. Tell people about how they can get tickets and how everything works.
So NOLA Crawfish Festival being held at Central City Barbecue on April 30th, May 1st, and May 2nd. You can get tickets at nolacrawfishfest.com. Or you can get them at the door the day of. The headliners are Tab Benoit. We got Samantha Fish. We got Ivan Neville and Friends. We got Dr. Claw featuring Ian Neville, Adam Deitch. Bunch of greats. Walter Wolfman Washington. Yeah.
What are the hours, Chris?
Doors are at 3, ends at 10 p.m. So, you know, if you're from out of town and you're going to a night show or late night show, you can do that. And if you live in town, you can leave at 10 o'clock and be home in bed by 10:30.
On a school night,
on a school night, and you can get up and go to work. A lot of locals tend to go Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, and I'm like, yeah, where do you live again? You know, I have to remind them. You know, ticket prices are very reasonable. We have tickets that come with crawfish, you know, when you walk with the ticket, and then some that do not. So we also have great VIP packages where you get unlimited crawfish, unlimited beer.
Okay.
You know, there's all kinds of different packages.
All that's laid out for you on the website.
It's all laid out on the website. And, I mean, like I said, it's from 3 to 10, Central City Barbecue, NOLA Crawfish Festival, a bunch of great New Orleans talent, great crawfish. You also got some barbecue over there. Central City Barbecue does it upright.
Yeah.
And, our Port Orleans Brewing Company is bringing it hard. So, I'd love to see everyone out there. Also, check out my website, crawfishking.com, and book your boil today. And don't forget, we bring Louisiana to you. So if you're from out of town and you want to bring a little Louisiana to your state or town, hit us up.
Yeah, cool. Chris, anyways,
thanks a lot for having me. I appreciate it. And I hope to see everyone out at the festival. Happy Jazz Fest, and have fun.
There you go. Awesome. Thanks, Chris. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Friends, that was Chris Shaggy Davis, NOLA Crawfish King out there. Go check out the NOLA Crawfish Festival next Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, 3 to 10 p.m. Central City Barbecue. Go hit up their website, get some tickets. It's going to be fun. Come out a couple days. It's going to be good both days. All 3 days is going to be a lot of fun. Friends, we're going to take a little break here on the show, and we'll be right back. Come on, Matt.
Politicians, trappers, priests, and whores have all strolled through these double fence doors.
Are you tired of drinking the same wines? Switch it up. Try the Kreutz Family Cellars wine. Kreutz Family Cellars is a small, family-owned winery in Sonoma County that makes wines from some of the most prized vineyards throughout Northern California. Each bottle of Kreutz Family Cellars wines has a magnolia on the label. The magnolia is a symbol of the family's southern roots and their way of life. True, honest, and fun. Look for the magnolia and pick up a bottle of Kreutz Family Cellars wines today.
Drinking that wine is their delight. When they get drunk, they want to fuss and fight. Hooping and hollering and talk all night. When they get drunk, they begin to fight. Drinking wine for the old age. Drinking wine for the order. Drinking wine for the order. Pass that bottle to me.
Wine. All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with you, WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans. And in podcast land, wherever you may be. Friends, I hope you enjoyed those interviews. Thanks to
the group there, the ship, the Picton Castle, and the crew, and Captain Sam Sikkema for having me on, as well as Tall Ships America for arranging that. That was a great interview. Had a good time being on a ship as a former dive instructor and somebody who did marine protected area work for 10 years in large portions of the developing world and in the States. It was good to be back out on the water, even if it was just on a dock ship on the Mississippi River. Doesn't quite count. But anyway, it was a lot of fun. Had a great visit and interview there. And then obviously a very interesting conversation with Chris Shaggy Davis, NOLA Crawfish King, talking about what he does, talking about crawfish season, especially for our friends who are maybe new in town, as I said, or for those that are listening from outside that aren't familiar with the ritual that is crawfish season and crawfish boils. Check out the festival. It's going to be a lot of fun next Monday through Tuesday. I know we touched on some of the music. We're going to have Tab Benoit, Dr. Claw, which is actually Ivan Neville, Adam Deitch, Nigel Hall, Nick Daniels, and they are featuring Cyril Neville. Ivan Neville and friends with George Porter. John Clary is going to be out there. NCF Southern Soul Review, which this is a great lineup. Luther Dickinson, John Medeski, Roosevelt Collier, Ron Johnson, and Terrence Higgins. You got Samantha Fish, Sonic Bloom, New Orleans Suspects, Billy Iuso, and the Restless Natives. Our good friends Honey Island Swamp Band are going to be out there. So that's going to be a lot of fun. Do go check that out. Central City Barbecue, 1201 South Rampart Street in New Orleans. Go get tickets at NOLACrawfishFest.com. Another event coming up that I wanted to flag your attention to, I didn't get to in the first segment, is the Zoo to Do annual event there to benefit the Audubon Nature Institute is taking place. They have two events. The kid and family friendly event is Friday, April 27th from 5 to 9 p.m. And as I said, kid friendly, snacks and sips, live entertainment. They're going to have animals out there, people are doing face painting, all that good stuff. It's outside. It's a spring casual attire, rain or shine. And then Friday, May 4th from 7 to midnight is the Whitney Zoo to Do. So the first one's the Zoo to Do for Kids 2018. This is the Whitney Bank Zoo to Do 2018 at the Audubon Zoo. And all this is to benefit the Audubon Nature Institute. The theme this year is Celebrate Lions, the Roar Returns. Go check that out. It's for a good cause. It's a great institution. Two ways to participate: bring the family or do the adult thing on May 4th on Friday. Go check out AudubonNatureInstitute.org for more info or call 504-861-5107. Friends, got a good show next week coming up for you. One of the rare times that we actually have it all pretty much organized. Our featured interview will have Elizabeth Pierce on, as well as Abigail Gulo. That's what I'm trying to say. And they are with the Drink and Learn podcast. And as you know, this show is available on the National Food and Beverage Foundation podcast network. They are my podcast network platform mates, if you will. And Elizabeth's been doing Drink and Learn for a number of years, doing cocktail tours, a lot of written stuff. She's a cocktail history expert. And Abigail, my good pal there, runs the bar at Compare La Pan, the noted restaurant here in New Orleans, Nina Compton's restaurant. And Abby's been running the bar there for a while and running the beverage program, a super talented bartender. And Elizabeth asked her to become her partner or co-host in the Drink and Learn podcast. I think they have about three episodes. So we're going to chat with them about what they're doing, their backgrounds, all kinds of interesting stuff. We touch a little bit on the cocktail scene. As you can tell, we've already recorded this. Talk a little bit about the Sazerac, some other interesting things. What they do on their podcast is they feature, it's about a half an hour. They do it every 2 weeks and they feature a specific drink, how to make it, its history, some anecdotes, some thoughts, various angles that you might consider the cocktail. And they're starting with some of the New Orleans classics and other classics and are going to move on from there. So be sure to catch that. And then also we're going to chat with Amy Brown, who is the new executive director, newish executive director of NAWFI, which is of course the New Orleans Wine and Food Experience, coming up in very short order here, 3-4 weeks. And we're going to talk with her about the event. And one of the things that we're going to talk about, I think some of us know that the event probably needs some work. It's still a really, really good event, don't get me wrong, but I think it's gotten away from its identity a little bit of what it probably needs to be. And Amy knows we're going to ask these questions. She's very excited to talk about this stuff and address some of the things that they're doing to improve the event or perhaps restore it in some ways to what it used to be. They've had some issues trying to attract wineries to come to the event and some other considerations. So Amy's going to come on. We're going to have a very candid conversation about NAWFI. I don't want to discourage you from going to the event. It's still a really, really, really good event, but that doesn't mean, of course, that we shouldn't ask questions about how to make it better or continue to make it better, right? So that's going to be part of the conversation next week as well. Friends, you can always catch the show, as I always like to note, of course, here on GSO, 3 to 5 p.m. Thursdays, if you're in the New Orleans area. And for podcasts, you can catch us on Google Play, TuneIn, Let's see, iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, and am I forgetting one? Oh, yes, of course, the National Food and Beverage Foundation podcast network that I was just talking about. So you can always get us there. Friends, a little interesting note in the world of beverage. This seems to be a trend these days. People that are putting out these super pricey cocktails with all kinds of glitz and glam connected to them, and you're paying $2,000 for a drink. I'm not talking about a bottle, okay? We're not talking about a bottle of wine or a bottle of spirits. We're talking about a drink, okay? Of course, May 5th is Cinco de Mayo. That's a commentary for another time. Very much it's like a Hallmark holiday created by Corona. But apparently we like to party on that day, so good enough. It's also the same day this year as the Kentucky Derby. Well, what is the drink, of course, most associated with a Kentucky Derby? The mint julep. Now, let me say this about the mint julep. I like a mint julep. Don't get me wrong. It's not my favorite drink, okay? The classic preparation of a mint julep is, of course, using bourbon. There were some variations. Professor Jerry Thomas, sort of the original craft cocktail bartender, in his book from the mid-19th century, basically, like a lot of the drinks during those times, it was sort of all the other ingredients were what changed, and then you could swap whatever base spirit in you wanted. But it's really, the mint julep in particular has become very much synonymous with bourbon, of course, Kentucky, so on and so forth. It should. But you take bourbon, mint leaf, a little bit of sugar, as it was traditionally made, simple syrup now, same thing, essentially, a little bit of crushed ice, and some will go with a splash of water. There you go. That's the mint julep. Now, it has an important part in the canon of drinks because it's loosely part of the Smash family. It's widely credited with being the cocktail that helped bring ice, widely used in the cocktail world. So there, you know, it's a good drink on a hot day. Don't get me wrong. Just never, my own personal opinion, been my favorite. But there's this variation that this guy's come up with. It's at the Brown Hotel. It is only available from May 3rd through the 6th. And it's, as I said, to celebrate Cinco de Mayo and Kentucky Derby happening on the same day. So it's basically a classic mint julep, right? They're using bourbon, simple syrup, crushed ice, and mint. And we'll get into that in a second, some variation on that. But they're also adding tequila to this one. And what they are using for the tequila in this one, apparently the bartender worked for a long time to get the balance on all this right. He's originally, his last name is Sosa. He is originally from Mexico. And He wanted to make it right, so he worked on it really hard. He's charging $1,500 for the cocktail, friends. So it better be right. Better be the most balanced cocktail I've ever had in my life. But the tequila that he's using is the Patron en la Lique. Series 2. There were only 299 bottles made. It was aged for 8 years in combination of American oak, French oak, and sherry barrels. And then it's housed, if you will, but bottled in a handmade, individually numbered Lalique crystal decanter. Each bottle of that goes for $7,500. All right. Then it also uses the old Rip Van Winkle 25-year-old bourbon, of which only 710 bottles were produced, making it the oldest and most expensive Van Winkle bourbon ever bottled. That's according to the hotel. This is reported in the drinks business, by the way. And so what, you know, again, it's basically a classic mint julep, adding this special Patron tequila. But where they go different too on the mint is they use Kentucky Colonel mint, a bit of chocolate mint, a dash of chocolate bitters, and key lime infused caramelized Demerara sugar in place of the simple syrup. Now, I will say this, a portion of the proceeds are going toward the Kentucky Humane Society Equine Care Program, which helps move horses into safe homes, provides adoption, wellness clinics, these sorts of things. So certainly for a good cause and a much needed cause there. At $1,500, I'm sure you got to recoup some of the cost if your bottles are $7,500 for the tequila, for example. So, but the portion of the proceeds, what's remaining perhaps, is going to go there. So, hey, that is that trend these days in, you know, making these super expensive drinks. It's actually served in a custom gold-plated engraved julep cup. I'm assuming you get to keep the cup for $1,500. You better. Anyway, I always find this stuff kind of funny because we've talked about that on the show here and there with these so-called most expensive cocktails of the world. So, hey, if you're going to be here, it's only available from May 3rd through the 6th. So if you're going to be at the Brown Hotel, be up there for the Derby, and you got $1,500 burning a hole in your pocket and you like horses, that's where you should go spend the money. Probably talking to no one out there, maybe one or two of you. But hey, if it helps the horses, I'm all in favor. So there you go. Friends, thanks for tuning in today. As always, hit us up on Facebook at NOLA Drinks and on Instagram at NOLA Drinks and on Twitter at NOLA Drinks 1, the number 1. Always like to hear your input. Always like to hear what you'd like to talk to us about or what you'd like us to talk about on the show. So there you go. Connect with us there. We always post some stuff that maybe we talk about on the show or some other things that we find of interest that we think you might find interesting. And we hope you tune in next week as we talk to Elizabeth and Abby from Drink and Learn, as well as Amy Brown from Nalfi. So everyone, remember, be kind to one another. Treat all of our in-town guests here for Jazz Fest with great kindness and hospitality, as we always do. Use your turn signal, friends. And until then, cheers, y'all.